the sacrifice brings blessings, but it also it lifts the spirit, you know?
We are Saints in the South, your source for gospel growth and good times.
Right. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Saints in the South.
What?
What's up? You got me, Kenny, and Average Joe with you this week, holding down the fort. We are in the book of Mosiah, starting the book of Mosiah, chapters 1-3 this week. And the title of the lesson is Filled with Love Toward God and All Men. So, as usual, we will start off with the introduction from Come Follow Me. When you hear the word king, you might think of crowns, servants, and thrones. In Mosiah 1-3, you will read about a different kind of king. Rather than living off the labors of his people, King Benjamin labored with his own hands. Instead of having others serve him, he served his people with all the might, mind, and strength which the Lord had granted unto him. This king did not want his people to worship him. Rather, he taught them to worship their heavenly king, Jesus Christ. King Benjamin understood that it is the Lord omnipotent who reigneth, who came down from heaven and went forth amongst men, that salvation might come unto the children of men, even through faith on his name.
Amen. The end. We can go home now.
That's right.
All right. It's great. You know, I've often said it's tough sometimes when people say, you know, what's the old saying? You know, a Bible. We have a Bible. We have no more need for another one or whatever. And I say, I remember one of the best examples I found was if you go into the topical guide and you look up plan of salvation, right?
Mm-hmm.
The big answers to, you know, why are we here? What are we doing? And what happened before and what happens after? That's basically the plan of salvation is the answer to all of that, right? And right. If you look that up, the topical guide, you look through the Bible at the references and they are not as clear cut and they're scattered about. And so you're finding, you know, words in a verse here in Isaiah and a verse there in the New Testament. And, I mean, you really have to do some legwork to put it together to say, aha, this is the plan of salvation. That answers all of those questions. And I mean, it's tough and it's not super detailed and straightforward, but when you look at the references in the topical guide to the plan of salvation in the Book of Mormon, Mosiah is strong there. And this speech by King Benjamin covers basically the whole plan. And it's consecutive, it's sequential, it's right there. I mean, it's boom.
Oh, yeah.
And it's so clear. And that's what comes to my mind when I hear that, you know, we don't need that. And you go, but do you really not need it? I mean, let's take another look. You know,
it just
King Benjamin does such a great job of summarizing what this life is all about and the key to the plan of salvation being the Savior.
Oh, yes. And I personally think King Benjamin was one of the greatest speech writers, greatest preachers, I guess, of all time. You know, I think my favorite chapter in all of Scripture is Alma chapter 5.
Spoiler alert. No, I'm just kidding.
But no, King Benjamin really, he lays it down. And he definitely here, he like you said, he lays it all out very, very clearly. So when we start off here in the book of Mosiah, it starts off, King Benjamin teaches his sons the language and prophecies of their fathers. And he talks about the importance of preserving the records. And he had three sons, and one of them was Mosiah, which was chosen to be his successor.
Mm-hmm.
And something a little interesting thing. I know this, it seems like it kind of starts in the middle of the story here. And, from BYU studies, at byu.edu. We learned that what was originally the last part of Mosiah chapter 2 became appended to the words of Mormon, and Oliver copied it that way into the printer's manuscript. He changed chapter 3 to chapter 1 and inserted the book of Mosiah, and that is how we have the text today. So just like the Bible, we know when these things were originally written, they weren't broken down into the chapters and verses that we have today. So, you know, they just had to kind of use discernment and whatever they had at their disposal as far as, you know, prophetic guidance to organize these writings into the, you know, chapters and break them up into the verses that we have today.
There you go. If I remember right, one of the earliest publication didn't even have verse numbers. Is that right?
The first. I'm pretty sure I've heard that also. The first copies of the Book of Mormon didn't even have verse numbers.
So what you got in chapter one? Did you want to hit on anything there?
First of all, I think this is really, really cool that they're gathering the people to hear King Benjamin speak, and obviously he was a very, very popular leader, because so many people showed up and they all pitched their tents in the same direction. There were so many people there that there was too many people for him to just stand and speak to. So they actually had to build a tower, which verse?
A cell tower, 5G. Just broadcast to everybody.
And as far as broadcasting to everyone, it's interesting that you say that, because one of the things he did was, even though he had a tower built so he could be elevated to where the people could hear him better, he knew that not everybody, even with that, not everybody was going to be able to hear his voice. And so it says that he caused the things that he spoke to be written down and distributed among the people, which for this time period, that in itself, there's a really significant thing here that is easy to overlook. If he caused his words to be written down and distributed among the people, that means that the majority of the people were literate, you know, and it already says that he taught his sons in the language of their fathers. Mm-hmm. So this is a big deal.
But
this
but
is
not
a big
just deal. His sons, not just the sons of the king, but you're talking about the people, the civil,
yeah, the people, the society. This is huge, that the people in general were literate enough to where that would, you know, he could have his speech written down and distributed among the people, to where obviously I can't imagine not every person would have been literate, but you know, for him to do that, it would have had to have been assumed that there would have been enough people within the land that were literate to where
that, like, it was useful to do it.
Yeah. It could be read.
Speaking of literacy, did I tell you I lost my thesaurus? It was terrible. I mean, very terrible. Really terrible. Terrible.
Go on.
I'm in chapter 1, verse 5. I thought that was an interesting takeaway there. He's talking about, King Benjamin is talking to his son specifically about the records and their importance. He says, "I say unto you, my sons, were it not for these things which have been kept and preserved by the hand of God, that we might read and understand of his mysteries and have his commandments always before our eyes, that even our fathers would have dwindled in unbelief, and we should have been like unto our brethren, the Lamanites, who know nothing concerning these things, or even do not believe them when they are taught them, because of the traditions of their fathers, which are not correct." Mm-hmm. And it made me kind of think that we have them, but if we don't use them, we're in the same situation as not having them. If we're not, and he goes on to say that, a couple of verses later in verse 7, "And now, my sons, I would that you should remember to search them diligently, that ye may profit thereby." And so, again, we've kind of talked about that before, about the words used, that they don't, we're not advised just to read the scriptures. It's always something more intense than that. It's feasting upon, to diligently search, to experiment with the words. And, you know, it's more involved than just a reading, and certainly more than just having them. You've got to do something with them, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think the rest of that verse even is significant. And I would that ye should keep the commandments of God, that ye may prosper in the land according to the promises which the Lord made unto our fathers. So, yeah, he's making a point that you need to have these writings if you want to know the commandments of God, because God has promised you that if you keep his commandments, you'll prosper. So you need to know what the Lord's commandments are. You need to know how to live, you know, and he's basically letting them know, like you said, they don't need to rely on the traditions of their fathers. You know, they need to look to the scriptures, look to God directly.
Right. That's right. You know, this brings up an interesting question. You mentioned that, you know, prosper in the land and the promises which the Lord made unto our fathers. And you remember the old primary song, Book of Mormon stories, you know, with, given this land if they live righteously. Is that how it goes? Yeah.
Yep.
So this promise about not only prospering, but also promised to be protected from their enemies and stuff. But if I'm not mistaken, it was President Hinckley had spoken about the September 11th, 2001 attacks on the World Trade Center as a fulfillment of prophecy of being attacked and stuff, and it makes you wonder. You know, we've been warned and forewarned and reminded that the times are approaching, you know, and if our society is becoming more wicked, if we're not keeping the commandments, then those promises, those protections begin peeling away, right?
Yeah.
And so it makes you wonder about that. 2001 Twin Towers come down, were attacked on our, you know, American soil. And then, you know, 2008, there's this huge financial collapse. So the prosperity of the land then starts peeling away. Right. And so there's just interesting tie-ins there as we become a more wicked society. Some of these promises and prosperities and protections and stuff start peeling away.
That's right. Yeah, I think that's a really good way of putting it, Joe. Because I know some people word it as these things being the judgments of God. But I don't personally subscribe to that point of view. I don't believe this is God doing this to us. Mm-hmm. I believe it's like you said, that he wants to bless us and he wants us to prosper. But when we're unrighteous, we block those blessings. And I reference a lot of Elder Uchtdorf's talk about, you know, blessings coming from heaven, and, you know, we using the analogy of an umbrella, how we, you know, he's raining down blessings on top of our heads, trying to bless us, but we put up an umbrella and just block the blessings from coming to us by our own hard-heartedness and our own disobedience. And we see that this happens not only to individuals, but to entire nations. And I think that is a more accurate way of looking at it. Like you said, is those protections are being kind of peeled away through our own lack of obedience, our own lack of righteousness.
I had a curious thought here in verse 11 and 12. King Benjamin is talking about, gathering the people together. He's given specific instructions to send out instructions to the people of the land, gather together, proclaim, that you know, they're changing, that the title of king is changing over to Messiah and stuff. He's going to tell them all that. And he says in verse 11, "And moreover, I shall give this people a name, that thereby they may be distinguished above all the people which the Lord hath brought out of the land of Jerusalem." And he goes on in verse 12, and I give unto them a name that never shall be blotted out except it be through transgression. And keep in mind, we know in verse 18 that they're all gathered together to hear him at the temple. So I thought that was an interesting little corollary there.
Good stuff.
On to chapter two.
On to chapter two. All right, man. Chapter two, man, there's some meat in this chapter.
All 40 some odd verses.
Yes. That's a big chapter. It kind of reiterates from chapter one that Mosiah had done as his father had commanded him and made a proclamation that the people gathered themselves together throughout the land that might go up to the temple to hear the words which King Benjamin should speak. And their numbers were great, and they made sacrifices. And in verse 4, also that they might give thanks to the Lord their God, who had brought them out of the land of Jerusalem and who had delivered them out of the hands of their enemies and had appointed just men to be their teachers and also just man to be their king, who had established peace in all the land of Zarahemla and who had taught them to keep the commandments of God, that they might rejoice and be filled with love toward God and all men. So this goes back to what we were talking about a minute ago. This is they recognizing the blessings, how much they've been blessed. And part of part of King Benjamin's motivation here was not just to speak to the people, but to help them to understand and to reflect on how blessed they've been. And so we've got all these people, many, we don't even know, but it was obviously a very, very large number. They pitched their tents round about the temple. So they all had their tents with the door facing toward the temple so that they could remain in their tents and hear the words which King Benjamin should speak. And in verse 8, and it came to pass that he began to speak to his people from the tower. And that's where it talks about that the words he spake should be written and sent forth among those who were not under the sound of his voice, that they might also receive his words. And that goes back to the literacy of the people, which is, I think, an important chain.
The first chain letter.
That's right. And verse 9. And these are the words which he spake and caused to be written, saying, my brethren, all ye that have assembled yourselves together, you that can hear my words, which I shall speak unto you this day, for I have not commanded you to come up hither to trifle with the words which I shall speak, but that you should hearken unto me and open your ears that ye may hear, and your hearts that ye may understand, and your minds that the mysteries of God may be unfolded to your view. Now, that is not a dramatic introduction to his sermon. I don't know what is.
Right.
He's like, come up here trifling. Don't be just taking this, casually. Don't be all cavalier about what I'm fixing to say to you.
And that's what I mean. It's so concise and condensed. It's just great. I mean, the plan of salvation, it's fatherly wisdom. It's choosing righteous leaders. I mean, so political governance, I mean, it's all right here in just a few chapters, it's great. Great stuff.
And for me, I think the biggest takeaway that I get from chapter two is the righteous example of righteous leadership that King Benjamin demonstrated. And this is something I think we could all learn from. We, obviously most of us are never going to be a king or even a president or a governor or anything like that. However, we all have positions of leadership at some point in our life. Those of, of us who are members of the church, more than likely we are going to serve, if you haven't already served in positions of leadership, you will serve in positions of leadership. And King Benjamin is the ultimate example of a humble servant as a leader. In verse 10, he says, I have not commanded you to come up hither that you should fear me or that you should think that I of myself am more than a mortal man. But I am like yourselves, subject to all manner of infirmities in body and mind. Yet I have been chosen by this people and consecrated by my father, and was suffered by the hand of the Lord that I should be a ruler and a king over this people, and have been kept and preserved by his matchless power to serve you with all the might, mind, and strength which the Lord God hath granted me. So there, man, there's so much there. Number one, He says, I'm like you. Look, I'm just another guy, which I feel like we often might not appreciate this in our culture here in the West. You know, those of us who live like in the United States, you know, we've been taught our whole lives that everybody's equal. And, you know, the president of the United States is just another guy, you know, puts on his pants one leg at a time like we do. But anciently, you know, kings were considered
they're deified
deity, yeah. If not actual deity. Yeah.
Right.
So kings were often worshipped as a god, or either as a god or as the direct messengers of God. As you know, something akin to, you know, some kind of deity themselves. So right off the bat, King Benjamin says, "What?"
Yeah, yeah, you're right. And I was just going to say to that, that mentioning our society, like it was pretty common. You'd say like, "Oh, you know, keep doing good in school and be good, and make good choices and stuff like that. You could one day be president." Like that was a pretty common saying for a long time here in the U.S. Anyway. And he says in this, I've been chosen by this people. So there's some sort of, you know, they had a voice in it or whatever. But to your point, like in many, many situations in the past, kings or rulers were deified and not answerable to the laws of the land. I think that's a big thing that separates if you're just a common person or not, is if you don't have to answer to the laws of the people. And that's one of the problems I think I see with our society and a lot of societies these days, is that all of a sudden these leaders are no longer answering to the laws of the land, that there's a set of rules for them and there's a set of rules for everybody else.
That's right.
And even when they've been caught red-handed, there's no punishment, there's no accountability. Yeah. And that's a bad situation.
Oh yeah. We have these bad things, circus shows of trials that go on all the time, but nothing actually happens to any high profile politicians. I think, nothing's going to happen.
Yeah. I was reading histories of monarchies and I ran across this odd case where there was a king who was only 12 inches tall. He was a terrible king, but he was a great ruler. Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, he said that he's been suffered by the hand of the Lord, that he should be a ruler and a king over his people. Another, the end of verse 11, to serve you with all the might, mind, and strength which the Lord hath granted unto me. So that's another really important point to me, that he is recognizing everything he has is from God. Any intelligence he has, any kind of strength he has, any kind of leadership qualities he has, he gives credit to the Lord for that. Super, super humble.
That's a common thing in the past. At least in Western civilization, in Europe and stuff like that, the kings, the princes, and so on and so forth, they still recognize like royal bloodlines and kind of definitely a caste kind of system. But they had the concept of noblesse oblige, if I'm saying it correctly. To where if you were blessed to be born into prosperity, into royalty, into titles and stuff like that, that it was your obligation to use that position to help those around you, to protect those around you, to uplift and treat well those around you. And it was a religious thing that you would be answerable to God for how you used your privilege, essentially.
Yeah.
So that's kind of an interesting thing. And he pretty much sums it up right there, that he was.
Yeah, it comes from the Christian tradition, which we're seeing right here. And this is what King Benjamin exemplifies. That's right. Yeah.
Exactly. Righteous king.
Yep. And verse 12, I say unto you that I've been suffered to spend my days in your service, even up to this time, and have not sought gold nor silver nor any manner of riches of you. So
no insider trading. Is that what I'm hearing?
That's what it sounds like. That's what it sounds like. He's not going into office making $100,000 a year and then coming out 4 years later with a $500 million net worth.
And he's handing over power to Mosiah. So term limits too.
Yeah.
Wow. What a swell guy King Benjamin really was.
That's right.
I love that verse 14 too, where he says, and even I myself have labored with mine own hands.
Yes.
That I might serve you and that you should not be laden with taxes. What an appropriate conversation starter this time of year.
Mm-hmm.
And that there should be nothing come upon you, which was grievous to be born. And of all these things which I have spoken, ye yourselves are witnesses this day. So I think everyone, well, hopefully everyone can kind of relate, especially around this time of year, of the burdens and things of less holy leadership.
Verse 13, something else I wanted to mention on that was really important. He talks about, neither have I suffered ye should be confined to dungeons or make slaves of one another. Now that is another thing that I think we could easily kind of gloss over, because slavery, we know, has been the norm through all of human history. That's been every single culture has owned slaves and been enslaved at some point or another through all of human history. So slavery up until recently, you know, for us, you know, we live in a world where it's just accepted that that's, you know, an immoral thing. However, if you understand the history, you know that for all of recorded human history, slavery was the norm. That was just how it was. So that means not only were the people industrious, but they were industrious with their own hands. They didn't, I'm going to say it, you know, take advantage of the labor of others, you know, through slavery of any kind.
Mm-hmm. I think the devil is slick, right? Because you're right. Slavery has been the norm, I think, throughout human history. It's either enslaving or being enslaved and stuff. And I think the devil is really slick in that he changes the words. He changes maybe the way it looks a little. But think about it, that there's more people enslaved today than there were in the 1800s. It's different. It looks different, or it's not as noticeable. It's child labor. It's, you know, indentured servitude. It's sex slavery. It's, I mean, all these things that are going on around us, and either we don't notice them or we ignore them, or it's just the way things are. But I think that's the same argument they used back in the day, that it's just the way things are. And you're right. And he, being a righteous leader, said, nah, we're not going to have that here. So interesting.
Yeah, 15, he says, I've not done these things that I might boast, neither do I tell these things that I might accuse you, but I tell you these things that ye may know that I can answer a clear conscience before God this day. And that is significant too. He's not bragging. He's like, look, I'm not here just to pat myself on the back and tell everybody what a good guy I am. You know, he's just letting the people know that, he has a clear conscience before God. And then, we go on to, he talks about service, and then the famous verse 17, Mosiah chapter 2, 17.
I had that one highlighted. Yeah, sure. Yeah. And behold, I tell you these things that ye may learn wisdom, that ye may learn that when ye are in the service of your fellow beings, ye are only in the service of your God. One of the things that I've always heard, if you're depressed, if you're sad or whatever, one of the best cures, best remedies for that is to go serve someone else. And I think that's true. It's true in my experience. It turns the focus away from you and onto others. And in doing so, you grow closer to God and they grow closer to God. Sacrifice brings blessings, but it also, it lifts the spirit, you know, both in you and in those you serve. And it's interesting because my son, he plays baseball, and as all sports, sometimes you make mistakes or errors or your teammates do, and things don't go your way, or things happen to go your opponent's way or whatever, you know. And he's young, and so he you can just see his body language, right? When something goes wrong or doesn't go his way, he kind of gets down on himself. And then the problem is, if you get stuck on the last play, then you are not in the right frame of mind for the next play. So then you may end up missing something because you're stuck on the last thing. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things I've been working with him on lately is when you start feeling those emotions, you know, you're your emotions falling, if you're, you know, getting sad that things are not going your way or whatever, or getting angry, as the case may be, turn your focus on someone else, like boost them up. Like, you know, even if you're feeling bad, tell your teammate, hey, don't feel bad. Just, you know, stick with it and let's focus on this next play. And sure enough, he's doing a little bit better with emotional regulation, you know, like realizing, you know, when I'm lifting someone else up, I feel a little bit better too. And so that's been a good redirect lately. Hopefully awesome. It sticks, knock on wood.
Yeah. Hope so. And that verse always reminds me of when Jesus was teaching his disciples in the Gospel of Matthew. He said, "For I was hungry and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty and you